Stéphane McMillan is the CEO and co-founder of Bon Vivant, a French company reshaping the future of dairy. Focused on creating animal-free dairy proteins such as casein and whey, Bon Vivant combines tradition and innovation to deliver sustainable, high-quality alternatives that replicate the taste, texture, and nutritional value of conventional dairy through precision fermentation. This approach not only reduces greenhouse gas emissions, but also addresses the growing global demand for eco-friendly food solutions. My name is Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews, in which I speak to leaders in alternative proteins and food biotechnology across the globe. Episodes can be found on all podcast providers as well as on YouTube. Okay, so thank you, Stéphane McMillan, who is CEO and co-founder at Bon Vivant. Have I said that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All good.
Okay, good. So could you quickly introduce yourself, Stéphane, and perhaps share the story behind Bon Vivant?
Yes, sure. So yeah, my name is Stéphane McMillan. I'm a French, and I co-founded back in January 2022 Bon Vivant with Hélène. I have a business background, and she has a she's a agro-engineer. So basically, we bonded our skills and ambition together to create Bon Vivant. The idea behind it is to use technology that has been around for a couple of decades now. To help fix the problem we see and foresee for the dairy industry. You know, basically, we're producing dairy proteins like caseins or whey for the dairy industry. So we are B2B. We are based in Lyon in France, and we're 25 right now.
Okay, so you are not creating an alternative milk. You are creating elements of milk. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly correct. Milk is a super complex food, basically a product. Every mammal on Earth start with it, but mostly for a good reason, because inside it, you have the dairy proteins. That's where the nutrition comes from, and also part of the taste and texture we do like in dairies.
Okay. And so what is the overarching mission of Bon Vivant? Hope to transform the dairy industry? The purpose?
So basically, there is a figure that I think encompasses mostly what we are trying to do. Then, when we will come to feed 10 billion people on Earth, basically, it would mean that we would have to deforest another almost 2 billion hectares. Obviously, we cannot do that. So if we don't change the way we are feeding ourselves, we will just destroy where we live. So that's the overall problem we are facing. And Bon Vivant in particular, we are targeting the dairy industry because it's one of the as I said, the most important way for nutrition. That's one thing, one of the best means. And at the same time, we have a big problem because the demand is growing super fast for dairies, but the production is actually stagnating and even decreasing in Europe or in the US, for example. So this is what we're trying to fix. And on top of that, we're trying to fix it by providing a solution that is way better in terms of environmental. And that's where this technology, precision fermentation, comes into play, basically. Because in short, with this technology, rather than using a macro organism named a cow, you use a microorganisms like yeast or fungi to produce your protein of interest that you want, the one that you need, in our case, the whey protein. And because it's a microorganism, it needs only a portion of the water needed. It produces only a portion of the greenhouse gas emission. The CO2 equivalent. So for with an LCA, so life cycle assessment of our whole product. And compared to cow, then the reduction in terms of CO2 equivalent is 72%, and the water consumption is 81%, and the arable land needed for that is a minus 99%. So we know that we can have a super high impact when it comes to the environment, and at the same time, we can help fix the protein gap that is just growing and growing because we are more and more on planet Earth, and that the production is stagnating on the on milk.
Okay, but you're not producing milk as such. You are producing the elements, and so how will those components of milk be used by the industry?
So that's why we are in no way disrupting the dairy industry. We are actually complementary to them. Why? Because our ingredient could go, for example, when you have a high protein yogurt, a lot of people are using that because they're super active, they need sports nutrition, also because they are transitioning from a meat, recipes to more vegetarian or vegan, and well, vegetarian in that case. And the high protein, normally you have 3.3% of protein in the milk. So in a regular yogurt, you should have 3.3%. But now we have new product with 10 grams, 20 grams, all of that. So these proteins, this supplement of proteins, is actually coming from the milk. So for the moment, so we are drying the milk, cracking it. That's the name. The industry is cracking the milk to extract this protein and insert it basically in our product. Would be much better if we could produce the proteins outside of the milk, like we are doing, and insert it, for example. So that's one way to reduce a lot the need for milk and the production of that. Another way is all the plant-based dairy, so like milk, but also yogurt or ice cream or whatever. Most of the time, well, if not always, they are missing a lot on nutrition aspects. They're not good enough, and also they are missing a lot of aspect when it comes to functionalities such as texture, taste, things like this. And by bringing the dairy, but animal-free proteins, we can help fix the plant-based organoleptic of this product. So you see, we can, with our products, you can basically place in both fields, either increase, improve the dairy that are already existing, or improve the plant-based product and make them much more appealing to a larger audience, basically.
Okay. So your product is ready to go, and you are now kind of selling it into the industry, correct?
Not exactly.
Okay.
So the technology is ready, the process is ready. So we now can produce kilograms of it. But now we have a super important phase, which is the scaling up. So now, how do we turn from kilograms a week to tons? And that's what we're talking about, because the industry is a huge industry. So yes, we are close to commercialization, but we still have this big piece that we need to pass. That's a big one. I mean, that's the industrialization. So that's where we are now.
Okay, so this is one of the hurdles faced by lots of people in the kind of cell ag
Correct.
and precision
Yeah.
fermentation industry. So how are you hoping to sort of get past that hurdle?
Yes, so one thing that is super important, I think, to mention is that compared to cell-based, for example, technologies that are really totally brand new, no one ever done it, precision fermentation has been around for more than 100 years. It started in the 20s with the acid citric. Then closer to us in the 90s, the insulin is produced like this, so diabetics. Disorder is treated with an insulin that is made like this. Closer even to us, since the 2000s, vanillin, so the aroma of vanillin or vanilla, sorry, is made like this, etc. So There are like this. There is in Europe, there is more than 80 products that are made through precision fermentation and that are in our daily life, sorry. So a lot of people here in the world already scaled this technology for different applications. So there is no real question on can we do it, but just how much time will take us. But we'll fix it, that's for sure. We'll make it like we do for a lot of other products. And on top of that, we can obviously have experts helping us. We have a lot of consultants. We have a lot of people doing that. And also, we don't need to build from scratch a plant. At some point, we will do our own. But for the moment, we are using CMOs, so contract manufacturers that do have already the CapEx installed, and they're just kind of renting the CapEx to us, bringing also obviously their expertise and all that. So that accelerates a lot and de-risk a lot the scaling of this type of technology. So that's where we are right now, working with two CMOs to do the scaling. Once this is done, at some point we might all invest our own money in building that their facilities.
Okay, so you say that that precision fermentation isn't a new technology, but applied in this way to milk proteins, is that new?
Absolutely correct. The innovation comes from that. Yeah.
Okay, so do you think I suppose you don't have the same problems trying to persuade consumers to try your products because you're going to be selling directly B2B. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a sense, you're correct. But at the end of the day, I am B2B, but we need a B2C to sell it so that they buy from us. So at the end of the day, we also need to explain what we are doing, to give full transparency, explanation, prove that we have an environmental impact. So that's why we just published our LCA that has been peer reviewed. I mean, all of this is also on us to educate. I mean, a lot of people don't know that when they eat cheese, there is already precision fermentation in almost every cheese. Basically, for cheese, you need what's called chymosin, rennet in also, and this basically coagulates the milk so that it becomes a cheese. And it used to be taken directly from the animal, but now, for a lot of decades now, it's made through precision fermentation. So each one of us, when we eat cheese, it's already made in some way by precision fermentation. So that is the kind of knowledge that we need to share and communicate about. And so even if we are B2B, obviously we are working hand in hand with the food industry to help on that understanding. And why do we need that?
Okay, so what are the what advantages do you have over other sort of biotech milk companies that are producing cultivated milk or sort of other forms of milk? What are the advantages you have over them?
So the first thing actually is we don't really need all of us to have a USP or something really over the other, because the truth is right now in the world, startups that are capable of like us producing whey through precision fermentation kilograms of it, we are five in the world only. So basically the need for our product and the tons that we need to produce are much, much larger than so many of us can produce. So, and actually we know each other. We do have some discussions and meetings from time to time. So we're not really in a hard or tough competition at all, more in the same boat kind of, so that's one thing. Now, obviously, I'm oversimplifying when I'm saying, well, making all the same protein and all the same processes and everything. There's a lot of differences depending on which microorganism you are using, depending on which exactly protein you are making. which process you apply. So the quality at the end of the day of the protein that comes in at the end of it is a bit different. So some might be better for, I don't know, yogurts. Others might be better at foaming. Some might be better for cheese, whatever. So it's a whole world that just opens. And so all of us, we have a lot of differences. Us in particular, we are applying some traditional methods coming from the dairy that's called functionalization. It's just a classic step in the process where you improve or you increase the functionalization, the function, sorry. And for example, it's the gelling effect, the foaming, the capacity to resist high temperature, which is super useful for pasteurization, etc. So all these kind of different things, we are applying it on recombinant proteins, so on the proteins that are made not through cows but through precision fermentation. And we patented it, all of this, and I believe we are the first one to do it.
Okay, so can you just give me a quick lesson in how it's made? I mean, obviously you are not using cows in any way, are you, to create your milk proteins? So
No,
how is
yeah,
it?
you're right. So yeah, I'll try to, as a non-technical person, to explain it. So what we do first, we select a microorganism. So again, it could be a yeast or a fungi. Then you will insert the genetical code that is coding from the cow to produce the protein of interest. So the whey protein for us. When your microorganism is ready, you put it in a steel tank, a bit like you've seen for beers or champagne, when you want to make that. And you let it ferment. So basically you bring in some carbon source, sugar, some oxygen, and you let it ferment for a couple of hours. Once the fermentation is done, you have a third step, which is then purification. So you take all the things that come from the steel tank, you purify. So basically it's super classic filtration methods. And thanks to that, you will only take only the proteins at the end of the day. So you will end up with just the protein, and then you dry it, and you have a powder made 100% of protein. And the cool thing is that it 100% identical by essence to the one made from cows, but it's super pure. You have no lactose, no fat, no other proteins, no nothing, because obviously you made it only for this protein. And this is something, this purity is super important for medical nutrition, infant nutrition, sports nutrition. So it's not really even a, we are not even trying to mimic it. It's the same, but also different in the sense that it's purer. If you will try to do it from milk, you will still always have a bit of lactose, a bit of other things, basically. So that's the four steps: strain engineering, fermentation, purification, and drying, and you're
Okay,
all set.
all right, that's good. I mean, it's good that I understand this if we're talking about it. So I suppose the next problem perhaps is price, isn't it? So I mean, is it cheaper to make it this way than it is to kind of take the proteins from milk? Because milk at the moment, obviously through traditional milk farming, is pretty cheap, isn't it?
Yes, so yes, it will be cheaper, because just for a simple reason, there is only four steps and it's super efficient, compared to having cows. For 3 years, they cannot give milk. When they start to give milk, you need to obviously take the milk. Then you collect it, then you dry it, then you crack it to extract the proteins. And then you finally you dry it. So you have a lot of different steps, a lot of different people. So it's in a sense, producing milk protein through cows, it's not super efficient. That was the only way to do it until today, but it's super inefficient. So by doing it the way we do it, it's super efficient. So at some point, yes, the price will be lower using precision fermentation. But again, we are not making milk. So we will still need and always need cows when we want milk. But for proteins, indeed, it will be cheaper. But it will, because indeed, for the moment, the cow industry is an industry that is centuries old. So that has been super, every cost has been cut. One could also argue that we are not paying the real price that we should for such an amazing job. So price is actually on the rise. Super classic, because the demand, as I said, is bigger than the production. So the price is actually growing up and a lot these days, and that will not change most probably. Looking at the just the way the market is structured, and the fact that the cows are producing less and less milk. So that's the big hurdle for us right now. It's to be able to scale as fast as we can so that the price is actually at price parity first and then going down. But yeah, price parity is super important. Also, it's a highly subsidized industry, notably in Europe. So obviously that comes into play too.
And where do
This
you
is a challenge.
see your main market? Are you going to be concentrating on Europe, or are you going to be kind of looking wider afield?
So, us as we are B2B, we are mostly listening to where our customers want to launch, and these guys are these companies are international. Right now they are mostly concentrating on the US, mostly because it's obviously vast and easier market, but mostly also because it's much more keen to innovation when it comes to food. Regulatory also is super fast. Us, we will be able to have the FDA approval by the end of 2025. Europe, in that sense, is a bit more complex. So Europe is in the roadmap, but first it will be the US. And then you also have other regions that are super interesting. The Middle East, for example, because obviously they do have cows over there. And cows over there is a challenge, as you can imagine. Same for Asia, Southeast Asia. So a lot of different region actually will need that technology. But for the moment, it's really the US, the focus, and Europe, like
Okay, so
B2.
your proteins are considered a novel food, so you need to get regulatory approval in each
So
jurisdiction.
which is a good news. I mean, we do have a regulatory frame. So that's obviously super helpful. So yeah, for Europe, it's novel food category two. As I mentioned, I mean, EFSA already approved so many precision fermentation. It's just a new one that needs to go through it. But indeed, it's a bit it takes a bit more time in Europe. For the US, approximately 12 months to get the FDA approval. In Europe, it will probably be 2 to 3 years. So that's why US is first on the list.
Okay, so you think with Europe it'll be 2 to 3 years before you get approval? That's quite a slow process, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, for a couple of reasons. First, EFSA is probably it's because I'm European, that's why I'm saying I'm the best agency. I mean, it's super protective, and that's great for Europe. And I also believe that's why so many people in the world appreciate, eating in Europe. It's also because it's super protected, so that's great. But obviously, that takes time. That's one reason. And the second reason also is, EFSA is overwhelmed with a lot of demand from a lot of, there's a lot of innovation right now with all the plant-based, all the biomass fermentation, precision fermentation, and there's a lot of things happening, which is great because we need that. As I mentioned in the introduction, we cannot keep on eating the way we eat. It's not sustainable. So it's great there is innovation. But obviously, for agencies like EFSA, it's a lot of work to approve everyone. So yeah, it takes a bit of time, but 2 to 3 years is it's manageable too.
Right. Okay. I'm a little, yes, 2 to 3 years. I mean, I've spoke to others at regulatory people working in the cultivated meat space, and they kind of estimate sort of 2 years. And I would imagine if it's precision fermentation, and they already have a roadmap, or you know, they have a framework for this type of technology, I'd imagine it would be a bit more streamlined.
I'm surprised who told you that for cell cultivated it would be 2 years, because
That's
for
ambitious.
something that doesn't exist,
Yeah.
I don't see how they can know how much time it will take. Well, it's how can you know how much time it will take when you don't even know the process, because it doesn't
Of
exist?
course, of
So
course.
I don't know how they calculated the 2 years. As we are looking at data, and for precision fermentation product, it takes 2 to 3 years. So we know from that. For them, I don't know how they calculated that, but then EFSA would be even faster than Asia or the US for cell cultivated. So that would be a surprise.
Yes. I suppose with your product, there is less sort of politics involved because, like you said, you're not replacing milk, you're not replacing dairy and cows, and so hopefully there won't be the same kind of resistance, maybe, that sort of some people might get for their products.
Yeah, I can tell you, actually, 2 weeks ago we were in a milk industry consortium, so with a lot of, well, all of them basically from Europe, and represented what we were doing, etc. And I can tell you, it was a super direct discussion, transparent, and they knew what we were doing, and then this then the need for that. So yeah, indeed, again, you're right. We are not competing. We are really complementary, and they are actually keen to understand how that will fit into their current process, how that can improve, how that can help them reach the net zero, objectives and everything. So yeah, no, it's yeah, no, it's there is no politics involved. So
Okay.
I do prefer that a lot.
So, what role do you see your proteins playing in reducing environmental impacts and helping towards net zero use? I mean, you mentioned earlier about this sort of that you don't need so much water as traditional milk, but then you're not really producing traditional milk. It's a different product, isn't it? So what is the role towards net zero and all of these things?
But it would be already done if someone had a silver bullet to reach net zero. It's going to be an addition of a lot of different things, different innovation, etc. So the role of precision fermentation will be major. I mean, biotechnology, and not only on dairy, on egg, on cacao, on whatever, basically you name it, but a lot will be done through biotechnology, and that's a super good news. Now, again, we are not in a system where you disrupt and you change. It's not the digital against the old world. It's agri-food, and it's more evolution. So we will fit into that. Precision fermentation, especially on dairy, will have a big role to play, but a lot of other things needs to happen. And everyone is basically bringing his brick to the wall. That's what we are doing, and that's why I was saying just earlier that it's great that there is no politic, because we really don't need that right now. What we all need is just to fix the problem, fix the mess we're in, and the sooner the better. And for that, we need all goodwill from everyone, and again, precision fermentation will not fix everything, that's for sure. But it will be a big part of the answer. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't consider that there's going to be a kind of arms race, a sort of technology race to produce the next replacement to traditional milk, between sort of precision fermentation and cultivated milk, anything like that?
No, yeah, not at all. It's a race against the harm we do to the environment, that's for sure. That's a big race, and we already started the race a bit late, most probably, so we need to catch up. But it's in no way a race between competitors are even less so against traditional. I mean, we are talking about a 800 billion industry, just the milk, the dairy. What we are bringing is just some innovation. We are a small part in the whole system that is, that's existing for decades and centuries. We again bring that innovation. So they need to understand it, and we need to find a way so that they can embrace it and take it with them. But we will, you don't disrupt the agri-food. And you don't even want to do that. I mean, at the end of the day, that's we need to eat three times a day. So you don't disrupt that kind of thing. It's just vital. So you don't
Yeah.
disrupt, you help, you improve. You don't disrupt that.
But I suppose if we're looking at kind of methane emissions, then do you think there is I mean this is slightly off topic, but it is important, I think. In order to reduce methane emissions, it's important to reduce livestock, or do you think that's not necessarily the case?
Yeah, well, there is this question, obviously, of methane. There is this question also of animal welfare. That's not something that we need to take too lightly. But again, tomorrow we need to feed 10 billion people. So this will not happen. Precision fermentation will not fix it all and will not feed 10 billion people overnight, or not even in 20 years. So it's unrealistic and a bit naive to think, well, okay, yeah, guys, we should replace it because they're producing methane. Okay, and what do you do of the 10 billion people? You let die like 8 of them so that we can manage it? No, obviously not, right? So there is other way also to fix the methane emission. I'm not a specialist at all, but I've seen a lot of news where they're improving the way they feed the cow so that there is less methane. That's another, it's not a silver bullet. It doesn't fix it all, but it helps. And it's the addition, that's what I was mentioning, of a lot of different innovation, a lot of different goodwill and hard work from a lot of different companies of all sizes, from startups to big groups to fix the problem. Again, the problem we are trying to fix is immensely complex. So intertwined with a lot of different things. When you move something, three other things are moving, probably not in the right direction. So, yeah, you need to take it carefully, be super humble, and work on everything at the same time. But unfortunately, yeah, we cannot feed out of thin air, right?
Yes,
So it's difficult. Yeah, so, yeah.
it seems that the dairy industry, in one way or another, is kind of going through a bit of a facelift, a kind of revamp, perhaps over the next sort of 5 to 10 years.
But not only the dairy, I mean, all industry, the automobile industry, the travel industry. I mean, all of us, we all our industries are based on a preconception that we can always grow, always more, consume more, and it's going to be fine. And all the our industry are made like this, all of them. This is wrong. So basically, all of them needs to change. And dairy, that's why we choose to go in dairy. Because it's so vital. Again, not a single mammal start life without milk. So like, it's like the beginning, and it's the best source of nutrition ever. So that's why maybe you don't know that, but you have yogurts that can actually are here for people that have cancer, people that have diabetes. It can be a lot of medical nutrition. I mean, it can help elderly people regain muscle. I mean, it's a whole world. It's not just the ice cream we have, right? It's a lot of
Yes.
things. So dairy is at the center of our nutrition and of our future. So that's why it's so important that we cannot just say, okay, guys, you know what? We stop with dairy. Too much methane emission. No, you cannot do that. We all need that. And actually, if you want to eat less meat, you need a super high nutrition source. Milk is a big one. So, yeah. Not everything is perfect,
But
Yes.
yeah, a good solution to eat less meat is actually to eat more dairy. And that's why dairy is on the rise. And it's 5% CAGR every year. It's because people are eating less and less, but we still need to live. And to live, we need proteins. And the best source of proteins of amino acids is milk. So yeah. And so that's why, yes, we need to invest in dairy and we need to make it work. Make it work for the milk. So we need to make it work for the cows. We need to make it work for the proteins by itself. And as we are on the precision fermentation. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. All right. So what's next for Bon Vivant? What are your next big milestones?
Really, 100% it's scaling. So basically, we have collaboration contract with big dairies already in place. That's where our kilograms are going. They are shipped to them so that they can try it, test it, etc., and start making products that we'll love. But a big challenge and our full focus is again producing tons the sooner. And so that's really the big challenge. And next close to that, launch in the US, and then from there, launch other countries.
And so you think perhaps you'll have a product on the market by the end of next year?
And no, end of next year, 2025, right? No,
Yeah.
more 2026. Yeah,
Or
we still
2026.
need a good 12 months to really finalize that and reach the tons. And in 2026, start slowly, but start commercializing and then ramping up from 26 to 27, 28, etc.
Okay, and
Onwards.
I assume, I mean, will you be using sort of collaborations? So will you be working with other sort of protein pr producing companies or chocolate companies or you know, what sort of companies might you be collaborating with?
So first of all, we are big believers of collaboration. I mean, again, it's the value chain is super complex in the food industry. So one company cannot make it all. So you need to understand exactly where do you fit on the value chain and then collaborate with all the others. For example, I need carbon source for my microorganisms. So sugar. I need someone that providing me the sugar. I don't know how to market a product. Honestly, launching a brand like, I don't know, Danone or Nestlé or whatever, I will not be better than them at this game. So I don't play this game. I provide them the so yes, it's everywhere. It's collaboration. So yes, obvious collaboration, as I mentioned, the Danones, the Nestlé of this world, the Lactalis, the Yoplait, the dairies. Then you have also the dairies, but more on the medical. So Danone Nutrition, for example, Nestlé also is strong there, and then you have all the plant-based. So it could be plant-based dairy, but could be also plant-based that just need better texture. And you can think about even plant-based meat. We could even collaborate with them to bring them the nutrition and the texture. Chocolate is obviously a big one. Bakery is a big one. Pastry. When you look, proteins and milk proteins are actually everywhere. So yeah. Infant nutrition, I mean, it's even a bit too much, we need to
And
focus and we need to see where it goes first.
to endless opportunities, it seems.
Yes.
So, yeah, I look forward to seeing your products in other products and standalone products. So,
Well, you're based in the UK, so maybe we could even go faster than in the rest of Europe, depending on how the regulatory will evolve with UK. So we're looking at that super closely.
well, I know that our regulators hope that Brexit might be an advantage as far as its regulations are concerned. So,
Yes, well, that's what I heard, but for the moment, not there yet, but it will. So we will see. But yeah, so maybe we will be in the UK before the rest of
hopefully.
Europe. Yeah.
Well, hopefully. It's been wonderful talking to you, Stefan,
Thank you
and
so much, Alex, for your time.
thank you very much.
Talk to you soon. Cheers.